Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, obviously we have had quite the week. The Republicans have officially won back the House of Representatives, though not by as many seats as they had hoped. So we will talk about that just a little bit. We're going to talk about the role that COVID deaths played in this year's midterms. Of course, Donald Trump announced he's running for president once again, something we all saw coming a mile away. But he's also got some problems happening with that ongoing fraud trial in New York. We'll bring you those details. And we're going to kick things off this week, of course, with another Ring of Fire Q&A, one of the best ways to get through as many topics as possible. And don't forget, if you want the full show every single week, sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, go subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. And let's get things started this week with the Q&A. Every couple of weeks, I post on our YouTube community page asking for people's questions. So if you're not already subscribed, please do so. YouTube.com/TheRingOfFire. Keep an eye, on that community tab. That's where I post asking for these questions. And before we get started, just a quick note as well. Next week, obviously, Thanksgiving. I hope everybody enjoys the holiday. And because it is a holiday, we are actually going to take a little bit of time off. So there will not be a new episode next week. So we're going to cover as much as we can this week. And of course, that's why we're doing the Q&A. So let's get started here. Our first question is from user Rocky, who says, "Hey, Farron, first of all, thank you for all the hard work you put into your videos. They're informative and insightful. My question is this. With so many polls changing every day, sometimes hourly, which polls would you consider to be the most reliable when it comes to politics?" Now, that's an interesting question because I don't know that there is any single polling company, polling group, you know, university, whatever it is, that is always spot on, right? There's not one that I look at and I'm like, oh, okay, it's from these folks. It's definitely good. Because you have good polls that do come out from most of these organizations on a regular basis. You know, YouGov is definitely one, Morning Consult, Politico, ABC News. I mean, you know, good grief. Monmouth is another pretty decent one. But they all also get it wrong. You know, every pollster at some point is just way off the mark and there's outliers. So I don't ever recommend looking at a single poll and trying to extrapolate data from that, especially if the margin of error is greater than 3%. That's one of the things they taught us, you know, when you major in political science research methods, that particular course, they tell you specifically don't ever trust a poll with a margin of error greater than 3%. If it's bigger than 3%, even 3.1%, it's basically considered in the eyes of actual political scientists to be unreliable. So what I do instead is I look at the aggregates. You know, you can go to the websites. 538, of course, is the most popular one. But there's also others that'll kind of have all of the polling data. Real Clear Politics is probably even better than 538. And it'll show you what all of the polls say. So from there, just kind of look at what the average is for whatever, you know, poll you're looking at, whether it's on public policy or a specific race. I think that's the best way to do it. Don't look at a poll. Look at all of the polls. And if you're going to do that, I actually would avoid 538. I would go to Real Clear Politics instead. So that was a great question. So thank you very much. Next question. Actually, two questions from Jesse Torres says, this is a two-part question. Number one, if Trump is the Republican nominee for 2024, who would his VP pick be? The second question is, if Biden doesn't run in 2024, who would be a great Democratic president and VP pick to beat Trump? All right, so let's start with the first one. Donald Trump, as we all know, is in fact running in 2024. Technically, he's running now for 2024. Mike Pence is out of the question. He has made it clear he is not tapping that well again. So who's it going to be? Well, just to kind of lay out what you look for in a vice presidential candidate. You look for somebody who shores up your weaknesses. That is why, of course, Donald Trump picked Mike Pence in 2016. Pence shored up all of Trump's weaknesses. Trump was inexperienced. Mike Pence had been around the block a couple of times. Donald Trump was the biggest sinner I think the Republican Party has ever put up there. Mike Pence was like best friends with the religious right. So it made sense at the time. But now the religious right has already gone to Trump. Even with all of his flaws, they're like, we don't really care. We know we're frauds anyway. We're with Trump. So that's a big deal. He doesn't need Pence for that. He doesn't need a VP for that. Where his big weakness comes from is suburban women. So who do you pick to attract female voters to show them that, hey, I love women too, but not in the horrible way that I'm currently being sued for? So I think Trump would pick a woman. Tulsi Gabbard, I think, is right up there high on the list. You still, unfortunately, for some reason, have some folks on the left that kind of like Tulsi Gabbard, even though she is officially a Republican who, by the way, endorsed 13 people in the midterms and 10 of them lost. So she doesn't have a good track record, but she is now a Fox News contributor. So maybe that's a good way for Trump to get back on Fox News' good graces is by picking Tulsi Gabbard. So we'll see. Another possible pick for Donald Trump, I think, would be South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, because Noem has the double advantage of, one, being an up-and-comer with the Republican Party. She is a little bit younger, but not so young that she's inexperienced. She's been running a state for 4 years. But most importantly, she just won re-election. So in 2024, she's not up for re-election. So she could run a vice presidential campaign and lose, but still not lose her seat as the head of South Dakota. So that is a big, big, big benefit for her. And that is something, of course, that you also look for. You know, I don't want to pull somebody away from a campaign where they could win for a campaign that they may not win. So picking somebody who doesn't have to worry about a reelection is also always a smart move. Then, of course, you have the crazies out there. He has floated Marjorie Taylor Greene. I wouldn't put it past him, although she does not play nationally, so that will not help him. But he's also looking for somebody that is basically going to be a blank check. You know, whatever crazy thing I say, they're going to back me up. He would get that with Marjorie Taylor Greene. He would definitely get it with Kristi Noem. He may get it with Tulsi Gabbard. So I think at the end of the day, we're looking at probably Kristi Noem or maybe even Nikki Haley, although she did provide a little bit of pushback to Trump at times. So that's where I think that's going. Second part of your question, of course, if Biden doesn't run in 2024, who would be a great Democratic president and VP pick to beat Trump? Merkley and Katie Porter. Not even in that order, Katie Porter or Jeff Merkley. You know, put them however you want on that ticket. I don't care. I like those two. You've got experience with Katie Porter. She's a little bit younger, obviously, than Jeff Merkley, quite a bit younger. And she's smart. She's powerful. She's direct. She commands attention. She takes on corporations harder than I think anybody else. I love Katie Porter. And I know I've said that 100 times. I've said it here. I've said it on Ring of Fire. I've said it in interviews I've done across the board. I say it on Twitter. Gosh, I love Katie Porter. And I hope, you know, she had a tough re-election. The Democratic Party, by the way, only put in $300,000 for her re-election race. Republicans spent $8 million to beat her. $8 million on a single House race to get rid of Katie Porter. That shows you how terrified they are of her. That's how powerful she is. That's why I like her. Jeff Merkley, of course, has been a great progressive. A couple things, obviously, that Merkley has done that I'm not a huge fan of, but, you know, really just a handful of things. Mostly, I do like Merkley. If I know a lot of people are leaning towards a Gavin Newsom, which maybe I'm okay with. I don't really know a whole hell of a lot about Gavin Newsom. I'd really have to dig in. But of course, if you get Newsom, then you cannot have Porter. So I'm going to take Porter over Newsom. Thank you for your questions. Next one is from Ed Cora. Not a question, but a comment. That's so nice that I have to read it. says, I'm a OTR truck driver, so I listen to YouTube all day. I like every video you post. I love your humor. There will be times I will just be literally laughing out loud down the highway. That's good to hear. It's also, like, make sure you're safe, though. I don't want to make you bust a gut and then you're not paying attention to the road. So please, eyes on the road, but I really do appreciate your support. So thank you. Thank you so much. Next question is from TSTS, who asks, during January 6th, I was questioning where was Homeland Security? You touched on this a few days ago. Did Homeland Security get questioned further by the committee? And where is Chad Wolf now? This is a wonderful question, and I've got the answer for you here. Right now, Chad Wolf, after leaving the Trump administration as the acting director of Homeland Security in 2021, he immediately went to work for the Heritage Foundation. He has been cranking out op-ed after op-ed in recent months, attacking immigrants. Like, that's all that guy apparently does right now, is he sits there at a computer ranting and raving about immigrants. He's getting his posts on Fox News. He's getting them on Town Hall. And, of course, he's a fellow now with the Heritage Foundation. So he landed on his feet pretty comfortably here. As for Homeland Security, where were they on January 6th? They were busy telling the rest of the government that everything was okay. If you go back and look at what the Department of Homeland Security did, of course, under Chad Wolf, on January 6th, what they were doing is they were telling the rest of the government that, hey, everybody's overhyping what's happening, even as people were storming the Capitol. Like, while people had made their way, forced their way into the Capitol, people were dying. Chad Wolf, Homeland Security, is out there telling the rest of the government, nah, it's not that bad. Nah, it's just a little hiccup here. Don't worry about it. They downplayed the entire thing, acted like it was no big deal. And of course, that is what Donald Trump was using as his justification for delaying deployment of the National Guard that basically should have been at the Capitol before the rioters even arrived. Because we had advanced warning that something was going to happen. Capitol police officers, starting at about, I think it was about 9:30 a.m., which was before the Stop the Steal rally concluded, 9:30 a.m., you had Capitol police officers radioing in to their superiors back at the station, telling them, we need more people. This is already getting out of control. We can't handle this. We need more. And those Capitol police just ignored it. They ignored the warnings. They ignored the threats from their own officers in the field. Said, we don't care. We're not going to send you anymore. We got nobody else. We're not going to call people in on their day off to come and help with the problems that you are currently facing right in front of you. But even before that, the FBI knew things were going to happen. Department of Homeland Security knew things were going to happen. And we have confirmation of that now because we have all of the internal documents, right? We have their emails. We have their memos where they said, these are the threats. These are what the people want to do. They even arrested some of the people when they arrived in D.C. Like, when they got off the plane, they were there waiting for them because they had seen the threats on social media. So they knew this was coming. And I guess, you know, talking about those arrests, they did occasionally take a little, you know, preemptive action there. But beyond that, no, all of the warnings were ignored. This was predictable. They themselves, these organizations, the Capitol Police, Homeland Security, the FBI, they predicted it. Secret Service, they predicted it. But they did nothing to stop it ahead of time. And I also just want to point out, too, that's one of the great things about this January 6th committee is that we've learned all this. We've learned about the failures of these government institutions, and that committee is about to go away, right? Republicans, of course, have secured control of the House, which means January 3rd, when the new Congress is sworn in, that committee won't exist anymore. It's done. Instead, we're going to have new select committees investigating Hunter Biden and Dr. Fauci and all kinds of goofball stuff. But the January 6th committee is effectively over at this point. And that's very disappointing because I think I think there's so much more that the public deserves to know. Next question is from Frederick White, who says, Farron, you are one of the most insightful and strong voices on the progressive side of liberalism. Well, thank you very much. Your videos are priceless, and I never miss a single one. Why don't you mention Al Franken once in a while? His incisive honesty and fearless criticism of the right wing was a breath of fresh air in standard politics. It was. Now, listen. When those photographs emerged of Al Franken, which was, of course, really at the height of the Me Too movement, I came out and I said Franken should resign. And now that the dust has all settled on that, I'm kind of torn. Was I too hasty in saying that Al Franken should resign? Was it really just harmless, you know, goofing around? He didn't actually touch her. He just had his hand there like he was. I don't know. Okay. It is a delicate, fine line that honestly is not for me to decide. It's not for you to decide either. It's for the woman in the photographs. If it made her uncomfortable, then it's not okay. And I know that's not what you're talking about, but I did have to bring that up because obviously that's what ended Al Franken's political career. And he was a great voice. It sucks that that had to happen. And I'm glad that he's back. I'm glad he's got his podcast. You know, we Ring of Fire, originating on Air America, which is where Al Franken also was. He was, of course, the headliner of Air America in the very early days of it. So, you know, Ring of Fire itself has a history with Al Franken, and we like him. You know, that doesn't mean we approve of what he did, but we understand how important his voice was. And hopefully he can build back the trust. I think he's done a pretty good job of that. And maybe it sets the stage for something in the future. So that's kind of all I have to say about Al Franken. I don't listen to his podcast because I actually do not listen to any other progressive folks. I follow him on Twitter. I talk to him. We're friends with a lot of them. But I don't listen to their stuff for the most part, unless it's just something crazy that I got to see, because I also do this. And just one of the things that weirds me out about it is I don't want to watch somebody else then accidentally borrow a line from them and forget to credit them, because then everybody gets mad. So I try to avoid listening to anybody else. I do not watch cable news at all. If I have an opinion on something, I want to make sure that it's something I came up with. I don't want to borrow from anybody else. I don't want to listen to anybody else's opinions because I like to form my own. If they mesh with everybody else, wonderful. If not, you know, so be it. But anyway, thank you for your question, Al Franken. I hope he can make a comeback. I really do. Next question is from Stephanie Borth, who asks, do you think it's possible for your platform and platforms, those of the like, to strategize together and truly form grassroots nationwide to grow a movement towards true humanity, accountability, compassion, justice, and most importantly, self-awareness? Use your subscribers to help with coordinating a type of town hall in their locality. Do it on the local news. Shoot, you're worldwide known through this platform because it's about humanity. It's just a thought. I do like that idea, and that is definitely something that, as we all move forward, I do think we need to work towards. And here's the thing. We, as a community with all of these progressive talkers out there, we've got good relationships with a lot of them. I have a lot of personal relationships with some. I'm in, you know, some group chats with them on a daily basis. So we talk, we mingle, we do these kinds of things. I do actually have a couple of folks. I don't think I'm allowed to say anything about it yet, but we are working on something very similar to what you are suggesting here. Possibly a series of events. Still working out venues and dates and all of that. It will not happen this year. It will happen next year. Again, I cannot get into any more specifics than that. I cannot tell you who else is involved. But I will say, you know, definitely some people bigger than me, some folks I know y'all would love to hear from. That is on the horizon. I will provide more details when I'm allowed to. So do keep an eye out for that. Keep your ears open. I'll let you know. It's going to be awesome. If we can pull it off, because it's also working with a lot of these other folks. It's kind of like herding cats. Okay. We all do have our own thing. We've got our own timelines. You know, this isn't even my full-time job. Like, I do videos in the morning. I do this podcast once a week and then I go to work. Like, I do my actual real job. And that includes, you know, working for a magazine. So it's difficult for all of us to get our timelines, you know, on the same line, I guess. We're working on it. We're trying to get there. And I do promise you, at least at some point next year, early next year, something awesome's going to happen. So just pay attention to that. User Cat T asks, will the DOJ still be able to charge Dumpity Trumpity while he is running for president again? The answer is 100% yes. Just because he is a candidate does not mean they cannot charge him. Because there is a world of difference between being the president and just running for president. We have actually seen candidates in the midterms that got charged with crimes. You can charge a candidate with a crime. Where the issue comes in, which technically isn't an issue because the DOJ is stupid, but the issue comes in when you're trying to charge a current sitting president with a crime, because during the Nixon years, he basically forced his DOJ to put out a memo saying, hey, we don't want to, not that we can't, but that we don't think it's good policy to ever charge a sitting president with a crime. That's the memo, right? That's the guideline that Robert Mueller used to not charge Trump with obstruction. He said, well, the DOJ said, no, the DOJ suggested it because a friggin' criminal was sitting in the White House and he made them suggest that to themselves. So technically, even a sitting president could be indicted. Now, the question is, does the indictment have any bearing whatsoever on whether or not he can be president? And the answer is maybe. Because as we know, there's really not a ton of limitations on who can serve as president of the United States. You got to be over the age of 35. You got to be a naturally born citizen of the United States. That's it. If you're over 35, if you were born on United States soil and are a U.S. citizen, congratulations, you're eligible to be president. It doesn't matter if you're sitting in a prison cell. You can run for president while sitting in prison. So even if Trump were to get indicted and then, convicted and sent to prison, he could still run for president. I mean, his rallies would be in the prison yard in an orange jumpsuit, but, you know, he could technically still do it. He could even win the election. I don't know how that would work in terms of could he pardon himself? And if he gets arrested on state crimes like in Georgia, he couldn't. So would he have to serve his term from jail? I don't know. Maybe that's something we're going to have to deal with after 2024. But it would sure be fun to find out. Now, the other possibility is that some of the things Trump is being investigated for actually would preclude him from being able to run for president or serve in elected office. The Presidential Records Act violation, by the way, that can come with a lifetime ban on running for public office and serving in public office. And obviously, if he is convicted is the key word, of attempts to support or incite an insurrection or rebellion against the United States, like on January 6th, if he gets convicted of that, then Section 3 of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution kicks in, and that bars him from public office. So that would be the only way that he's not able to run for office, but doesn't matter which one it is, he could be indicted for any of them even while serving as a candidate. Here's a question from Jeffrey LaRue, who asks, should presidential candidates undergo psychological evaluation before being allowed to run for the office of president? Yes. I know we could never, you know, put that in place as a law. Just basically due to the laws we have in place to protect disabled people. And I agree with that. But at the same time, I would be okay with carving out an exception to the Americans with Disabilities Act to say, listen, we're talking about somebody that has to go and represent this country on the national stage. We need to make sure that they do not have any issues mentally that would make them unable to perform those duties or put the United States in clear and present danger. You know, these are the people that have the nuclear codes. And just so everybody is aware, the President of the United States does not need authorization from anyone to immediately launch a nuke. They can, like Biden right now, could pick up the phone and say, you know what? Nuke North Korea. Do it. Here's the code. And they would have to do it. Trump could do that, could have done it, you know, based on what we know, kind of talked about doing it. So, yeah, I do think we've got to put some safeguards in place to make sure that the person able to do that, able to wipe out the planet, is, you know, competent enough to not do those horrible things. You know, maybe some folks obviously have a different opinion on that, but I think we got to put some safeguards on there. Right now, there's no safeguards at all, and, you know, that's kind of bad for the whole planet. Next question is from Dorothy Harp, who says, I believe we should have term limits on our elected officials if they are not qualified candidates and are not doing their performance. They should be treated like the rest of the people in the private sector, be written up and terminated. We need to bring justices back into our world. 100% agree. I've said for a long time, this is actually one of the only issues I agree with Ted Cruz on, because Ted Cruz has said this. We need term limits for everybody, whether it's House, Senate, or federal judges, including the United States Supreme Court. Nobody should just be able to do this forever. And in the case of the judges, you know, federal judges and SCOTUS, you get that appointment for life. Like, you're just there forever. And impeachments of these people are incredibly rare. It's only happened less than a handful of times throughout all of history. So, yes, we need term limits. And the Democrats, by the way, actually had a wonderful piece of legislation that unfortunately is going to die at the end of this session, that basically said a Supreme Court justice, every president gets to appoint a justice in their first and third year. And we keep the number at 9. So what happens is that each time a new justice would be appointed, the longest serving justice would move to senior status. They wouldn't get to rule on cases anymore unless one of the 9 active judges had to recuse themselves. Then the senior justice would come back in. They'd be able to rule on it. They'd still get to keep their jobs, technically. They'd keep the title, technically. They'd keep their salaries. They'd keep their staff. They'd keep their office. You'd still technically be on the Supreme Court, but you wouldn't get to make any decisions unless those extreme circumstances came up. And every president would get at least 2 appointees to that court every term. That is fair. That is smart. And I love that legislation when they introduced it. I'm very sad that it didn't happen. But I think in terms of term limits for House members, 10 years, you get 5 terms. 5 terms is all you get. Senate, I say we limit it to 2, 12 years. I think that's fair. If it's 10 for the House, let's make it 12 for the Senate. Or hell, go 12 for the House, 12 for the Senate. Keep it even. Nobody should be in that position of power longer than that. And yeah, I know that means saying goodbye to a lot of people we've all come to love, but hey, we'd also get rid of a lot more people that we dislike that are causing damage to our country, and I think that's a net win. So that's my opinion on term limits. I like it, and I think we ought to do it. Next question from Donovan Finley, who says, what are your thoughts on a rematch between Biden and Trumpty Dumpty? I think Biden wins, and I think Biden wins fairly easily because Trump has ruined himself. And I know that's weird. Everybody's like, well, we all hate Trump. Yeah, I get that. But listen, in 2016, Trump got enough votes to win the Electoral College because there were enough moderates and independents out there who went for him instead of Hillary Clinton. I know she won the popular vote, but unfortunately didn't get it where she needed it the most. So Trump won the swing states by convincing people they needed something new and different. After 4 years of Trump, people saw you got nothing new and you got nothing different. But, and that, of course, is why they went to Biden. It's a return to normalcy. This guy's been around forever. He knows how things work. He's not crazy. Let's go for the guy that's going to calm things down, especially in the middle of a pandemic. But had that pandemic not happened, we would currently be in the middle of the second Trump administration. Trump's mishandling of the pandemic is what caused President Biden to win. I hope everybody truly does understand that, because that is what happened. But it's not just his handling of the pandemic that tarnished Trump in the eyes of those moderates and independents. It's what happened after he lost the election. When he started challenging the results, when he started lying about fraud, when he started doing all of that, when the January 6th Capitol riot happened, that's when those moderates and independents turned him off for good. They said, we're freaking done. We're not going back to that. This guy's crazy. This guy is dangerous. So that is why 2024 would be different from 2020, which of course was also different from 2016. Moderates abandoned Trump in 2020 because he mishandled the pandemic. They gave up on him ever having a second chance because of his reaction to the election. So he can't win those people back, right? They're not going to be like, well, I mean, I know he let a million people die and he had the Capitol riot, but why not again? They're not going to do that. Trump can't win outside the Republican base. That's why I think he stands no chance of winning a general election. Biden would cruise to an easy victory. If Biden chooses to step down and let another Democrat take his place, it would be a massive landslide, I think. Depending on the Democrat, probably. But Biden's weak. Listen, he's weak. I like the guy. Personally, I like him. I like a lot of what he's done. I dislike a lot of what he's done. But overall, we have to look at it not as our personal opinions, but as the public as a whole. He has an approval rating that is in the toilet right now, still bad. People are ready to move on from him. That might be the only thing working in Trump's favor. So if we take that away, Democrats, I think, cruise to a pretty easy victory. Here's a question from Alex Adams. Says, can Supreme Court justices be removed from office or charged with wrongdoing? Yes, they can. Supreme Court justice would basically go through the same impeachment process as a president. So you would have the House that would draft up the articles. They would take the vote. Once you get the majority, because in the House, all you need is a simple majority. So that's easy. That's the easy part. The hard part is removing them in the Senate, because then you go on to the Senate trial. You got to get, you know, 2/3 of the Senate to approve it. And because, you know, the way things are, we haven't had a single party that has had, you know, the 66 seat majority in quite some time. So it would be dang near impossible to impeach and remove a Supreme Court justice. And unfortunately, that is the only way you can remove them, unless God comes knocking on their door and says, hey, TikTok, time's up. So those are the only two ways. And I think Clarence Thomas definitely needs to be impeached. I think he has given us enough evidence that he is unable to do the job, that he cannot do it faithfully and legally. So I think he should, but I don't think he will. Big Dog 913 asks, who would you see running 2024 on the Democrats and Republican side? Who do you see being the most likely candidates from each party, and who would win? My opinion, I think Gavin Newsom or Pete Buttigieg would be good options. I am not on the Buttigieg train right now. I really am not. And I got to tell you, the supply chain issues, which, by the way, I do not blame him for at all. Like, it's not Pete Buttigieg's fault. So don't think I think that he did this. No, he didn't. The problem is the public thinks he did. So right there, Buttigieg just lost. That issue, you know, not being able to find baby formula, Republicans would use that and hammer the hell out of Pete Buttigieg. It was not his fault, folks. I'm not saying it is. But the public thinks it is because Republicans told them it is, and Democrats let them capture that narrative, so that narrative becomes their reality. That reality sunk in for a year now. we got all those cargo ships off the coast of California that Buttigieg won't let in. He can't overcome that. He can't. Maybe in 10 years he could. But in 2024, absolutely not. He would go down in flames even against somebody like Donald Trump. Gavin Newsom, again, don't know a whole heck of a lot about what he's done. I do know some, obviously. I'm not, you know, an idiot. But I do think he's strong. I do think he's a fighter. He's definitely not my first choice. So, you know, as I've said, Katie Porter, Jeff Merkley, those are my picks. Also, wouldn't mind Elizabeth Warren taking another crack at it. I love Elizabeth Warren. I love Bernie Sanders. Bernie's had a couple of goes at it. And the age issue is definitely an issue, whether we want it to be or not. Voters out there do look at that, even though Bernie, I don't think he's lost a step in the last 40 years. That age thing is going to not sit well with a lot of voters. So, again, Katie Porter, Jeff Merkley, Gavin Newsom, you know, he's definitely on my short list. So I think there's that. The Gretchen Whitmer, by the way, Gretchen Whitmer up in Michigan. Definitely somebody worth taking a look at as well there. We got that. Next question from Terry Allen Jr. says, in the future, will an employee maybe in training do videos while you're absent? Maybe. It's possible. Here's the thing. We have a small team here. There's four of us. Four. That's it. And each one of us, you know, we've got our own positions. We got what we do. So it's very difficult to bring somebody else in. Obviously, there's been times we've had more than four. There's been plenty of times we've had less than four, by the way. But it's very hard, especially where we live in the reddest part of Florida. It's kind of hard to find somebody that fits in with our, you know, very progressive group here that would be willing to go on camera and talk about progressive policies. So if we did, we'd have to, you know, kind of outsource that to somebody else. And it's just very difficult to do. And it's just easier for me to record stuff ahead of time when I'm going to be out. So we may do it, but I don't think we ever will. So here's a question from Black Cover 95. It's more of a personal one. It says, whose dog is Aspen? And what would you have said at the end card had she not growled at that moment? I don't know, because her growling, it made it perfect. And she doesn't even growl. Like, that's what's so funny. I don't know why she did it there, but it really worked out perfectly for that little end card video that we made. She's my dog, by the way, for the record. She's my dog. In fact, just a couple days ago, she turned one. She's wonderful. She's an English cream golden retriever. You can see more of her, by the way, if y'all are interested, on my Instagram. I'm at Fair and Balanced over there. Got two other dogs. Hannah, who is 4 years old. She is also an English cream golden retriever. And then we have Pepper. He's the oldest. He just turned seven, I believe. No, six. He is a lab mix that we adopted from the shelter. He's the smartest dog in the world, which, of course, he uses for evil. But he's also the sweetest. Like he's my buddy. You know, it's just I don't know how else to say it. Like, he's just my buddy, and he's great. And Aspen and Hannah, obviously, they're wonderful. They each have different personalities, and they're so different with their personalities. It's wonderful. Dogs are great. If you're not a dog person, become a dog person. Because they're awesome. And by the way, don't think that that means I don't like cats. We have six cats. All of them rescues, by the way. Most of them formerly abandoned kittens that we come across and we're like, oh, we'll take care of them for now. And then 5 years later, it's like, well, I guess it's just ours now. We got lots of animals and we love them. If I could, I'd probably have more. Let's continue here. Comment here from Diane. Hi, thanks for doing what you do. You not only bring us facts, but I love your commentary. You're hilarious, but also intelligent. I don't know if anybody can answer this, but what are Trump and Viktor Orban doing and talking about? Do you think Trump shared or sold his stolen documents with or to him? And if so, for what purpose? I want to know why they're so cozy. they're so cozy because, well, it's the same reason Trump is cozy with Putin, same reason he's cozy with Kim Jong-un. He loves people that rule with an iron fist because that is what he wants to do. He loves that they can take out their political enemies and nobody in their country can say anything about it. He loves that they can just arrest people for reporting the facts. He loves that nobody can challenge any of those people, whether it's Orban or Putin or Kim Jong-un, or, of course, the Saudi royal family. That's what he wants to do here in the United States. Do I think he sold any documents or shared any documents with them? That I can't say. Would it surprise me if he did? No. But I don't know. I mean, part of me wants to think that there's maybe some things that even Trump won't do. But I don't think there is. Like, I don't think anything's off limits with the guy. And the worst part is, honestly, I don't even know that we're ever going to get any answer on that. Any. So that's the worst part. Is like, we don't know what he did with them, who he shared them with, and he's never going to tell us. I'm sure he probably didn't tell everybody around him, like, hey, I'll be right back. I'm going to go fax these classified documents to Vlad. So there may not be anybody other than Trump who knows. And the person he shared them with sure as hell isn't going to tell us. So again, we may never know. And that, of course, is the most terrifying part ever. There's a question from Jesse Torres also asking about term limits. And I already addressed that, but Jesse, thank you for your question. Here's a question from Stephen C. Says, what can progressive voters do to prepare for the 2024 election? How can progressive politicians demonstrate they are different from corporate Democrats? If the left can only accomplish one piece of their agenda in the next 2 years, what should it be and why? And as well, do we have enough time to do so? Is it even possible either way? Okay, I think that's actually a lot of questions, but let's break them down. If there's only one thing that they're able to accomplish in the next 2 years, codify Roe. That's what we got to do. We got to save the lives of women because women are going to die because of this. I know that doesn't help the economy. I know it doesn't address inflation, but we have to protect the lives of women in this country, and we've got to stop the Republican attack on them. So if we could only do one thing, which again, we can't even do that, but if we could, that would be it. 100%, without question, without hesitation, that's what we should do. The economy, it has ways of, you know, kind of righting itself every now and then, so we'll see what happens with that. But in the meantime, human life is way more valuable than the economy. What can we do to prepare for 2024? Well, I think right now everybody needs to make sure you're registered. Make sure that your state has not put any new restrictions in place that may apply to you. That is, you know, first and foremost, what you can do. Make sure you yourself are ready to go so you can get to that voting booth and you can cast your vote without any issues. That's priority number one. And I know a lot of people, we just had midterms, so a lot of people probably already checked those boxes and that's done. So great. Let's move on to step two. Step two is keep track of the money. If you're supporting a candidate, you better be able to answer anybody's question. If they walk up to you on the street and say, oh, you support this person? Who's their biggest donor? If you can't answer that question, you don't know enough about that candidate. And depending on the answer to that question, maybe you ought to rethink why you're supporting them. If somebody asks you who's their biggest donor and you say, oh, well, it's the defense industry. Great. You're backing a terrible person. Money from corporations 100% changes the way people vote. So, oh, their biggest donor's Wall Street. Wonderful. You're backing a corporate Democrat. Maybe go for the progressive challenger if there is one. And that's the other thing we got to do too. We have to back these progressive challengers to the corporate Democrats. And I'll say that with a caveat, as I frequently do. Because there are some areas of this country where corporate Democrats are all that can win on the left. A Bernie Sanders is not going to pull off a victory against Joe Manchin in West Virginia. They just won't. West Virginians love Joe Manchin. He has an over 60% approval rating. He is one of the most popular senators in his home state. They like that. So sometimes that is what we get because that's all we can get. If we don't have that, we end up with a Republican. But I think in the case of Joe Manchin, it doesn't matter because he doesn't go with Democrats ever. So we've got to be strategic. We can run far left people, true progressives, in certain areas. And we got to make sure if we're running them in an area that might be a little questionable, make sure they can explain why the progressivism is better than the corporate democratism or the republicanism. And I think that's obviously one of the benefits, you know, John Fetterman had. John Fetterman did a great job. He's a huge progressive in a swing state. Something 2 years ago, people probably never thought, nah, it's not going to happen. He's too left. He won. So that's a good lesson that there are some areas progressives cannot make ground with. But there are areas we can, and that is another thing we got to do. We got to identify those areas where we can make progress. And sometimes, you know, maybe just concede that there's other places where we can't. Pick our battles wisely, spend the money wisely, but also follow the money that your candidates are getting, make sure they're actually progressive. Here's one more question. I'm going to do one more. This is from Tim Blott, who asks, I'm sorry I'm laughing because this question's so funny. He says, hey, quick question from Scotland. Do you think that Trump is crazy enough to have buried documents in or beside the grave of his ex-wife? Yes, unfortunately, yes. In fact, when the FBI went to Mar-a-Lago, right, when that news broke and was, oh my God, the FBI just took all these documents, I made the comment on Twitter that, uh-oh, they're probably going to need to exhume Ivana's body to see if he hid documents in there too. Like, that was my first reaction to learning of that. So, yeah, I do think he would. Because, right, I mean, who's going to think to look in the coffin or next to the coffin, underneath the coffin, for documents? Now, of course, the other side of that is if he hid them in the coffin, then they're of no use to him, right? You know, he took them because he wanted them for a reason. He does like to show them off. Maybe he was going to sell them. So hiding them in a coffin, that kind of puts them off limits. So that probably is not something he did, but it's definitely something that I do think he would do. So, you know, there's that. But anyway, listen, thank you all for your questions this week. These have been phenomenal. And I know, again, there's so many that I didn't even get to. But if you want to be a part of it in the future, please do make sure that you go subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. That's where I post on that community tab asking for questions. So thank you all. And this, of course, is the end of our free portion of this week's episode of Ring of Fire. But if you want the full show every week, including that member portion and access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archives, go sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com.